The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Views of right and wrong, and views of the world. There are just a lot of different ways that we believe things. I mean, a lot to the topic of views is really connected with the topic of belief. Because these filters that we have, typically or often we're seeing through some filter of a view, and it's because we believe that view is true that it serves as such a strong filter for us. So, you know, we might have views of ourselves, how we are and what we are capable of. We might have views that, I have a lot of talent in mathematics, but I don't have a lot of talent in writing or something. You know, so we may have that kind of view of just what we're capable of. You know, I'm not capable of writing a book, but I'm capable of proving a theorem or something like that. So, you know, just in simple ways, we have these beliefs of who we are. And other people have beliefs of who we are as well. I think we've all experienced that. You know, the dynamic in families is very strong along these lines, that, people going back to the family of origin after having been away for a while, you know, you kind of get a sense of who you are apart from your family. And you might have a sense of, oh, I'm not that person that I am with my family. You know, I'm not that argumentative person that I am when I get in my family circle. I'm actually, you know, pretty calm and pretty balanced. And then we move back into our family. We go back for a holiday, and lo and behold, there we are, argumentative again. You know, so it's almost as if the patterns between family members lock us into those dynamics. So views of who other people think we are impacts how we see ourselves. We, in turn, also have views about how other people should be, how our parents should be, how our children should be, how our partner should be. So all of these, these interlocking beliefs and views feed back on each other. So those are some kinds of personal views that we hold. And these, you know, from the example of the family, you can see how these views impact how you are in the world. And you go back into your family's dynamic, and there you are, back into that old pattern. So in a way, these views that lock us into place, they can cause some suffering for us. They can cause some stress, some dissatisfaction, some struggle for us. And they can also support us. I mean, I'm not going to say that they're all suffering. I mean, views can also support us. You know, we can have views of what we are capable of and act accordingly. So there's those personal views. And then there are views that they're kind of personal, but they're also impacted from our society. You know, that the society tells us things over and over again, and so cultural. You know, in a particular culture, there are views that are cultural that impact us personally. Probably one of the most prevalent ones. And it may be wider than just our culture. In fact, I'm sure it's wider than just our culture. If I get what I want, I'll be happy. You know, that is a message that we're given over and over again. In our culture, it's particularly, if I spend money, I'll be happy. You know, you hear that over and over again on commercials. And we begin to believe it. We begin to believe that if I have things, I'll be happy. And that belief, too, has been corroborated by our own experience. That, in the past when we've gotten things that we wanted, you know, there's a moment of happiness to that. It feels good to get what we want. And so, you know, we believe based on that pattern, based on being told it and based on the experience of, oh, when I get what I want, it makes me feel good. We think that that's the way to happiness, that that's the only way to happiness. So we kind of get trapped on this spiral or this circle of, okay, I've got what I want, and oh, that made me happy, and now what's the next thing that I can want in order to make me happy? I've seen this this kind of mind of wanting to want sometimes, you know. I've opened up a catalog of some kind and, you know, start flipping through the pages and it's like, oh, what do I want to want? You know, looking for something to want. What is it that I want so that I can have it so that I'll be happy? So these kinds of views, they tend to spiral back on themselves. And we get caught in a cycle of needing to get something more, needing to want something, to have something more, and not really recognizing that if we just let go of the wanting, this is a radical thing that the Buddha pointed to, if we let go of the wanting, there's no dissatisfaction. It's kind of amazing. We don't have to get what we want. It's possible to let go of the wanting. So this view that happiness comes from getting what we want, well, a form of happiness comes from getting what we want. But not the deepest, most reliable kind of happiness. Another kind of view that we have in our culture is something along the lines of, if I have something, that means I deserve it. If the thing is a good thing, it means that it can kind of feed back that, you know, if I have this good thing, it means that I deserve it and I'm a good person. If I have this bad thing, it means that I deserve it and I'm a bad person. You know, we can have it happen on both sides, that we take kind of identify with the state of having something as reflective somehow of meaning something about us. And then there are even broader societal views that are more along the lines of how the whole culture is put together. You know, the last ones I was talking about was kind of views that are endemic in what we're taught at day after day. But this one is kind of a broader, it's kind of more along the lines of how the whole country works. And it's, you know, something along the lines of, we have the capacity to use nature to produce things, therefore we have the right to use nature to produce things. So we have the capacity to dig all of that oil out of the ground and to heat the environment up and create global warming, and therefore we have a right to do that. So that's kind of, you know, that's a view. It's kind of a view that is just endemic in the way the whole culture is set up. It may not be a view that an individual holds, but we're all enmeshed in this kind of a view, which leads to suffering through overconsumption of resources and global warming and all kinds of other problems. And then there are what we could call metaphysical views, views of, you know, what we think of as the ultimate nature of reality. You know, whether we believe that there's a God or not, or whether we believe that there's future reincarnations, that kind of thing. So views about the ultimate nature of being in the world. The Buddha pointed to all kinds of views, whatever kind of view there is, as being a danger in a way. The danger lies in the not in the view itself so much, but in the fact that partly because it is a view, inherently in a way almost, the view is clung to. We tie tightly to it. As I mentioned before, you know, there's a connection between a view, views and beliefs. We could say that, you know, in a view is a belief that is held to be true in a way. And so in its very nature, there is a kind of a clinging to views. With a belief, there's a sense of, yes, this is right, this is what I believe, this is the truth. So what's the danger? What's the danger with views? I pointed to some of it a little bit earlier. With views of who we are, what we're capable of, it's kind of self-limiting. That with the belief or the view that this is what I'm capable of, it kind of encompasses or holds that, and this is what I'm not capable of. So that we essentially create a view of who we are, and that kind of boxes us in. And we are boxed in when other people hold views of us. And we box other people in when we hold views of them. So part of the exploration here is around looking at what are our beliefs, you know, what are our beliefs about ourselves, and beginning to identify them as, okay, this is a belief, this is a view. When we can actually recognize it as a view, we have the possibility of beginning to extricate ourselves from the box that we put ourselves in. And essentially we can kind of like become free from our views, freedom from our views. And in, you know, in looking at how we box other people in as well, you know, if we can let go of views that we hold around other people, we're offering them freedom from our views. So this kind of almost takes a little bit of a leap of faith, or a, you know, it's almost a venturing into the unknown when we let go of our views. I mean, our views are often created based on our experience in the past, what we know about ourselves, what we've done, what we've accomplished, what we've seen in the world and its reaction, in its relationship to us, and. You know, stepping beyond those boundaries can be a little bit frightening. You know, we're essentially stepping into the territory of the unknown. So do you have that courage to step into that territory? As we impose views on others, we also create the conditions for struggle and suffering. There's one famous quote by the Buddha. He says, "Those attached to views roam the world offending people." It's the attachment to views is often called one of the roots of dispute. So someone who holds to a view, someone who adheres to views, holds to them tightly, relinquishes them with difficulty, they tend to be argumentative around those views. So the Buddha pointed to views and holding tightly to views as the root of quarrels, disputes, and leading to fighting, to war, to murder, kind of pointing back to kind of this holding tightly to views as being the source of many of the ills in our world. And we can see this in our world today. How political leaders have the view that they have the right to do what they want with the resources in their country. And to, in Burma, for instance, you know, political leaders feeling they have the right to basically, you know, enslave the population to build roads and oil pipelines and create so much misery and suffering. This too, you know, we can see this actually if we look into ourselves and look into our own hearts. We can see that, you know, the beliefs and the views of those political leaders who are causing so much suffering, they're not that different than we are. And they have more power. I had this experience at one point. I was noticing my anger at a particular person. I was so angry at this person. And at one point, I saw in my own heart the wish that that person would be harmed. And in that moment, because I saw it so clearly, I saw that, you know, it was kind of like seeing that that wish, that small, you know, seed of wishing that that person be harmed, kind of like in my consciousness, it mushroomed into the capacity for harm in my own heart. And the recognition that, oh, that is where war begins. That small thing, seemingly small, an individual wishing harm on another individual, that's the seed of war. It was really humbling to me to see that. That I'm right, you're wrong. You deserve to be punished in the way that I have been hurt, you know, that kind of thing. I had been hurt by him, and I felt in some way that I wished him to be hurt in the way that I had been hurt. And that, you know, that belief in right, wrong, you're wrong, being kind of the seed or the root of that wish. So the, you know, these views can mushroom from small internal thoughts of ill will to full-scale war. There's a more subtle danger to views. I mean, that's a kind of the broadest danger of views. The more subtle danger to views is that in speculating, thinking about things, we basically become obsessed with thinking. And we think that thinking is the way we solve problems and thinking is the way we get things done. There is some truth to some of that. I mean, some thinking does lead to some results. I mean, we can make plans and then follow through on those plans. But we can become obsessed with thinking. Obsessed with thinking about, you know, even the meditation. In the meditation, what, you know, what should I be doing right now? Should I be doing this kind of practice or this kind of practice? Or what about this rebirth thing? I mean, can that be right, you know? And just sitting there obsessed with the thinking about it as opposed to just meeting. What is your experience in this moment? It's kind of hard to see things as they are when the mind is obsessed with thinking about things. In general, views, as I mentioned earlier, obscure things, the way things are. They become these filters, and we see our world through these views, whether it's a view of of reality, of rebirth, a view of right and wrong, a view of what you're capable of, whatever kind of views there are, that's how we see the world. And in seeing the world in that way, it tends to, because we're because we're looking through this filter and seeing things in that way, we tend to pull out of the environment things that confirm those views. There's an example that Steve Armstrong gives about your own personal experience sometimes not providing accurate information, and this example works to some extent. I think I'm going to put some caveats up front about this example because it's not a perfect example, but it will give you the sense, give you the idea. So, you know, we stand on this planet, and every day we see the sun come up in the east and set in the west. Every day we see that. Our own personal experience, from our own personal experience, it sure looks like the sun is moving across the sky, that it's the sun that's moving. And so, you know, that kind of view was at one point predominant in the history of science, that the Earth was the center and everything was revolving around the Earth. And then a little bit more education information came out, and it was understood that actually the Earth is spinning really fast, and it's the spinning of the Earth that makes it seem like the sun is moving. Now, none of us have any problem understanding that. I mean, so, you know, our view has been revised in a way to understand that it's the spinning of the planet creates the appearance that the sun is going around the Earth. But it's not our direct experience, but it is an understanding that we have come to based on being taught in school. So our own perceptions of experience are not necessarily reliable. That's mostly the point that I was trying to make here, that our own perceptions of experience do not necessarily accurately reflect the truth of things as they are. So how do views form? This is another thing to look into. One way that I've just mentioned is basically from our own direct experience. Views form from our own direct experience. The kind of classic example around this is the story of the elephant and the blind men. I'm sure you're mostly familiar with this story. Actually, this story is a teaching story taught in the Buddhist teachings. The Buddha tells this story. So I don't know if this is the original place for this story, but it's actually in the Pali Canon. So the story of the blind men and the elephant, which I'm sure you're mostly familiar with, is that blind men are brought to an elephant, and they're shown various parts of the elephant. Some blind men are shown the legs, they're feeling the legs, and others are feeling the tail, others the ears, others the tusk. Others the side of the elephant, and then the blind people are asked to describe the elephant to each other. And one says an elephant's like a post, the ones that felt the leg. And another one says it's like a broom, the one that felt the tail says it's like a broom. The one that felt the side says it's like a wall. The one that felt the tusk says it's like a prod. And in hearing this, they came to quarrel with each other and actually came to blows. And I think this really points to the tenacity of views formed from our own direct experience. Because we've experienced it directly, it's much harder to believe that there could be possibly another view out there. Now, so, you know, the blind man that felt the leg and saying, oh, it's like a post. Well, a part of the elephant is like that. You know, broadening the perception to, you know, there may be other parts of the elephant that you didn't experience. So there's a correct perception in that situation, but a limited perception. And I think this is one of the ways in which views can be very tenacious and kind of threatening in a way, that because we don't have the whole picture, we can't see from the other person's perspective. So sometimes views can be formed, as like with commercials, as I talked about earlier, views can be formed by hearing something repeatedly. We hear something often enough, we start to believe it. Happiness comes from having what we want. We hear that often enough, we believe it. We get a little bit of hit of the truth of it in our own experience, we believe it even more. Sometimes views can be formed by being told something by a reputable source. So, you know, an example of this comes from when I was a kid. I was in an art class, and the teacher was teaching us how to draw apples. She was pretty good with teaching us about color and how the color changed and shifted and how we should change the color as we drew the apple and colored it in. She was not so good on form, because when we, you know, started to draw apples and they weren't perfectly round, she came around to us and said, "Apples are perfectly symmetrical. There are no such thing as lopsided apples." And we had all seen lopsided apples. We knew this wasn't the case. And in fact, one day a little boy brought in a really lopsided apple and put it on her desk, and she didn't say anything. You know, and years later, I was thinking back on this and thought, you know, I was cutting an apple, actually, and cutting it through a line of symmetry, because apples do roughly grow symmetrically. You cut it in half, and there's roughly two mirror images of each other. That doesn't mean that they're perfectly round, but there is a line of symmetry. And I can imagine, now I don't know that this is what happened, but I can imagine that this teacher had been told in some biology class by some, you know, professor that apples grow symmetrically. And then she misunderstood what symmetrical meant. And so this view was created. And after this view was created, she couldn't even see lopsided apples. You know, it didn't. It's like it was there in front of her, but it didn't connect. It didn't connect. She still held the view, even within the face of very obvious evidence to the contrary. She still held the view. Our perceptual process is also prone to error. And the way that we see things, you know, we walk into a room where there's a dimly lit room and there's a rope coiled in the corner, we may think it's a snake. And so the perceptual process is not perfect. We do make mistakes. So this is another way that views can be formed, out of mistaken perceptions. There's one very poignant story that I heard along these lines by a woman. This was a story I heard on NPR. A woman had been raped, and she was shown a lineup of people and saw one of the people in the lineup and identified that as the person who had raped her. She was wrong, but the person was convicted and went to jail for years. And the evidence for her was that every time she looked in her memory, She saw the face of the person in the lineup that her memory had kind of revised itself in a way to put that person's face in the memory. And years later, I think some 20 years later, a DNA evidence proved that he was not the rapist, and they actually found the rapist. And she was asked, you know, how about those memories? And she's like, you know, I don't know. I don't know how that works. And at this point, she said, now it's kind of just a blur. You know, it's gotten to the place where she doesn't see the wrong person in her memory anymore. So we can mistake our perception. We can, and in this case, having a dramatic impact on another person's life. So those are some of the ways that views are created. There's another way that I'll just mention briefly, and that is through our meditative experience. We can, in meditation, have very deep experiences, and coming out of meditation, form a view around those experiences. Those are also pretty tenacious. The Buddha actually pointed to those as being some of the most insidious kinds of views. Again, it's like it's a view that's created from personal experience. And because it's a view that's created through a very deep form of personal experience, it tends to be held to all the more tightly. There's a whole discourse that the Buddha gave on various kinds of views that we hold to. And the vast majority of those views that he listed in that discourse were views created out of meditation. So, you know, this is something that, you know, in going into meditation, if we, you know, go into meditation and experience something and come out and believe something based on our meditative experience, that's a place to be careful. You know, that's a place to be somewhat cautious. So coming back to views themselves, I want to just kind of bring one other piece in. The connection between thoughts and beliefs, basically. But there's a distinction between thoughts and beliefs. And, you know, this is something that's very interesting for us to notice, to pay attention to. So there can be a thought, for instance, I'm a failure. And that thought can appear in the mind without any belief attached to it at all. Or that thought can appear and the belief can be very strong. So you might notice, you know, you might have noticed something along these lines in your own experience. So for instance, you know, if you find yourself someday, you know, in a really good mood, things are going really well, and you make a mistake, you know, it's like, oh, I didn't do that very well, you know, that I'm a failure. You know, it might be more like, well, you know, I just didn't do that thing very well. You know, you can see that sometimes when thoughts like that come up, they're kind of like, oh yeah, you know, I don't even believe that. You know, that thought came up and I don't even really particularly believe that. And then there can be other times when maybe there's a little bit of depression a day, you know, things aren't going very well, and that same thought comes up, and because of that climate of the mind, there's more of a tendency to believe that thought. So noticing in your own experience when thoughts are associated with belief and how strong is that belief. There's a distinction between a thought and a belief. As I just mentioned, kind of this thought, the thought, you're a failure, can appear in the mind and have absolutely no belief. It can just simply be a thought flitting through the mind. It's when we give it the belief, when we kind of weigh it down with belief, that it becomes a problem for us, that it kind of enters into our mind stream as, oh, this is a problem. It's a problem that I'm a failure. So this becomes a kind of an identification. So this brings me to kind of the connection with views and suffering. What's this connection? I'd like to propose that any time there is some kind of dissatisfaction, some kind of struggle, some kind of suffering happening, there's some kind of view or belief operating in your experience. And it's well worth a kind of an exploration, an investigation. What is the belief that's underlying this struggle? Not to do too much thinking about it, but, you know, just asking yourself, what's the belief here? You know, there's a struggle going on. What's the belief here? A common view, belief that leads to suffering, it's not supposed to be like this. So underlying that, you know, that is kind of just a belief. That's kind of the surface level belief. You know, you're in a situation. It's not supposed to be like this. What is underneath that? Underlying that, there's often something that we think it means that it's like this. So it's not supposed to be like this. Because it's like this, it means I'm a failure. It means I'm not lovable. It means I'm not good enough. It means I don't try hard enough. So there's a connection with that kind of sense of just basic dissatisfaction of it's not supposed to be like this. There's usually something under there that's a kind of belief operating around the why you think it's not supposed to be like this. So we pick up on the meaning of the underneath kind of belief. You know, I'm a failure, I'm not lovable, I didn't try hard enough. And we think it says something about who we are. There's an identification that happens there. And we kind of assume the identity of that. I am a failure. I am not lovable. I took on, you know, the identity of being a miserable person for so long that it was like that filter, you know, that filter I talked about, you know, looking through the view of a miserable person for so long that I found ample evidence to support the fact that I was a miserable person. And so these identities really get entrenched as filters. I'm not lovable. I'm miserable. Looking at the world through that filter, we see somebody scowling. Oh, more proof. I'm not lovable. We, you know, see somebody who can't spend time with us that day, and oh, more proof that I'm not lovable. I'm miserable. And even if something happens that, well, this person does want to get together with me, and well, okay, I can have a good time with this person, but really, I know I'm a miserable person. And we can kind of discount the contrary evidence. So these views can be very strong. You know, picking up on information that supports the identity, just reifying, strengthening that identity. And anything that comes in that's not in line with that identity or that view kind of gets discarded in a way. Like with my example, I'm a miserable person. Well, yeah, I'm happy now, but, you know, that's just now. I'm really miserable. I know that that's what I am. It's like that gets dismissed. It's not seen. So the wisdom that we can bring to this is, well, it's like this right now, and it will change. So I want to be clear, you know, with views, when things are happening that are contrary to our views, when things are happening that we think shouldn't be happening, there needs to be some understanding about the situation. It's not simply to say, oh, this is a view, everything's okay, you know, no problem here. It's more along the lines of, okay, here's the situation. It's an impermanent situation. It's the truth of this moment. It's not the truth of who I am forever and always. It's the truth of this moment. And what has happened in the past? What have been the causes and conditions that have led up to this experience here and now? Are there choices that I've made that have led to this situation? So to being honest with ourselves about how we've contributed to the arising of this experience. And also understanding how our present moment views and attitudes are contributing to our feeling around this experience. So, you know, this is how things are right now. It's not supposed to be like this. The rejection of it's this way adds a layer of dissatisfaction, a layer of struggle, a layer of discomfort to our experience. It is like this. Causes and conditions have come together to make it like this. And our reactivity based on our views is what's creating our struggle. So we can equally be led into suffering by the belief or the situation of this is the way it's supposed to be, because we can end up in the situation, again, underlying that it means something. This is the way it's supposed to be. This means that I'm lovable. This means that I'm better than other people. This means that I'm a success. And when things change and things are no longer the way we think they should be, because we have set ourselves up in that, you know, that identity of this is who I am a success, when sometime we aren't a success, the discrepancy between those two leads to a lot of suffering. I've seen this in my own experience, the setup that I make for myself, being a perfectionist. You know, when I can sort of meet that goal of being who I want to be, when I don't meet that goal, I struggle drastically because I had it for just a second. That's the way it was supposed to be. That's what I am. But then proof that I'm not that way, 20 minutes later, I'm devastated because I'm a failure. So I have seen for myself that it's really important, really helpful to see both sides of this. See both sides of where we like things and think, you know, the identifications that we create that we like, the views of this is who I am and this is the me I like, are kind of a setup for the me that I don't like. So noticing that kind of back and forth, the views that that we hold of who we are, and how our own views of who we are a setup for our own fall from those views, a fall from those identities, let's say. So when there's suffering, you know, what's the belief that's operating? What do I believe needs to happen? You could ask yourself that question. Last week I used the example, two weeks ago. If somebody makes a face at you, you know, there might be a belief that arises in you that this person doesn't like you. You know, you're talking to them and suddenly they make a face. You might think, oh, they don't like what I'm saying or they don't like me, and you form this belief. So, you know, that's may or may not be true, that person not liking. Maybe that person had a stomachache or something. We don't know. But suppose sometime later you do find out this person doesn't like you. Is that a problem? Is that something that creates suffering for you? That this person actually doesn't like you? What's underneath that? What kind of beliefs are there? Is, you know, if you think this person doesn't like you, is there a belief, well, that person's not worthy of my liking them anyway? Or, well, that person's just, stupid or something, you know? Or maybe it's directed to ourselves. Well, if that person doesn't like me, then I must not be likable. Or I must not be doing something right. I must not be doing something right if that person doesn't like me. So what's underneath it? So we can't simply decide to stop believing our views. You know, they're pretty entrenched. We can't just decide, okay, I've got this belief that I'm a miserable person. I'll just stop believing that. I'll just stop, you know. Doesn't work that way. You know, they're deeper, they're more deeply ingrained than that. But what we can do is to observe the belief, get familiar with it, and get familiar with the consequences. Get curious about your views. Get curious about the validity of these views. Get curious about observing experience and recognizing when you're seeing through views. And as in the example of the miserable person, you know, begin to take in, well, I am happy now. Notice if we're looking through a view, notice when, if you can see through that view, if you can recognize that a view is operating, then you have the possibility of seeing things in the environment that do not corroborate that view. So, you know, recognizing that a view is operating, you've got the possibility of noticing that there's other information out there that might contradict that view. So, you know, there's one person that makes a face when I'm talking, and then there are 25 people that don't. Okay? That's other information. Taking in that information as well. So I think in this exploration of views, as we really start to explore our beliefs at a very deep level, when we really open up to what we believe, we can find out to our surprise, actually. I mean, you know, we know things aren't permanent. We know things don't last. Intellectually, we know that. And yet our belief system functions as if things are permanent. We do actually believe that having something will make me happy. We believe there's something to have that will make me happy. It's kind of amazing when we really start to explore how our minds actually work. You know, I know that having a piece of chocolate is not going to really do it for me. But in that moment of having the chocolate, there's something there that just buys right into it. You know? There's a kind of a belief that, yeah, this is happiness. You know, maybe there's some endorphins going that, you know, give you some, you know, supporting evidence. But there's some way that our beliefs actually buy into it. It's really quite interesting. So, you know, get curious about your views. Get curious about what you actually believe. It will surprise you. And you don't need to beat yourself up about it. We're all like this. We all have these kind of very deep views around identity, around happiness. So start to look at those. Start to look particularly around the views you have around what brings you happiness and who you are, and begin to question them. You don't have to throw them away, but begin to question them. Begin to see, is this all that I am? Maybe, yes, I'm this person that does this kind of thing at times. But is that all that I am? So also starting to explore our beliefs, we get closer to seeing things as they are, without these filters, without these views, without these screens covering our experience. And that is the doorway for us to being with experience without reactivity, without struggle, without dissatisfaction. It's our own views that underlie our own suffering. So I must have talked slowly. It's now 9 o'clock. I had thought I would talk for about 45 minutes and we'd have time for a discussion. Sorry about that. Thank you for your attention.